सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। There are, from one perspective, only two things in this world. Only two things exist. Me and everything else. There's me and not me. And when we say me, when I say I mean from this epidermis in. So there's this, as someone once said, this bag of bones and water and bile and blood. The skin is like a bag, right? And it holds stuff in. It's got a few holes in it, the eyes, the ears, etc. 9 holes. Which holds everything in. And this is me, and I walk through this world of not me. I walk through this world of other. This chair is not me. This room is not me. You are not me. My children are not me. They may be mine. We may have a relationship, but it's not me. So I start right at the skin, right? So if you were to poke right here, touching me, you're not touching me, you're not touching me, now you're touching me. You touch the very tip of my little finger and you're touching me. Curious thing. So when I touch my arm with my finger, am I the finger touching this? This, the arm? Or am I the arm being touched by this finger? And the sense of touch, which is inherent in the skin and the nerve endings that permeate the body, the sense of touch permeates the body, and the sense of touch permeates both internally and externally the body. So this is me. Right? I'm this body. I walk through this world, not me. So when I say namaste, namaste is not a word. It's actually a Sanskrit phrase. And I'll be using a little bit of Sanskrit, but I'll translate everything. Sanskrit's an incredible language. So powerful and so beautiful. For chanting, it's extraordinary. And, of course, it's a language, right? It has meaning. So by looking into the meaning of Sanskrit words and prayers and sentences, a whole world of wisdom opens up. So when I say the phrase namaste, there's two words, namaha. So when you say the word namas by itself, it turns into namaha. Namaha, namaha. There's all sorts of chants that end in namaha, 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 namaha. But when it comes before a T of the takara, the T of te, it's namaste. Te means to you. Te means tubhyam. The actual whole phrase is mama namaskaraha tubhyam astu. May my salutations be to you, te. Okay? It's a second person personal pronoun. Fourth case dative, to you. To you. Simple. Namaha comes from the verbal root num in Sanskrit. And I've yet to find a really good translation of that word because it's often translated as salutation. And I don't know about you, but to me, salutations makes me think of salute. Right? Salutation is the abstract form of the word salute. I salute. And what we have in the West is the only salute we really have. Well, we have a couple. We say, waving is a salute, right? It's a gesture which represents a relationship. So in India, in fact, you know, in other parts of the world, namaste just means hello, right? You don't think much about it. Howdy, you know, it's kind of their version. And you say hello and goodbye. It's a term of greeting and farewell, goodbye. But you know, when we say farewell, goodbye, farewell, we don't really mean may thee farewell in your journeys henceforth. You know, we just say bye. It's a way to acknowledge someone's leaving and someone's coming. But salutation, right? So like in a military situation, a salute, a salutation is a gesture of respect. In a military situation, a salute is a gesture of authority, right? Recognizing authority. And the, you know, an underling will salute someone who has more authority, more power, given the structure in the military, and the higher a person will salute the underling as a recognition that, yes, I acknowledge that you recognize my authority. Some of you may be familiar with the Surya Namaskara, right? In asana, in yoga, there's the Surya Namaskara, the sun salutation. That namaskara, that namas, is the same namas of namaste. Namaskara, kara means doing. Kara comes from the same word as karma, action. Karta, agent. Kriya, you may have heard of kriya. It's an action. Karada means an instrument of action. Namaskara is another word for namaste. And it means a salutation. It means doing namaha, doing a bowing. And so in India, often what they do, you know, in other parts of the country, they'll touch someone's feet as a sign of respect. And it's a rever, or they'll bow down completely. Or in the South, they'll lay down on the floor in front of an altar, let's say, a murti, a deity. Or they'll touch their teacher's feet, even their elementary school teacher's feet, or their parents. Just as a sign of respect. It's a cultural form of showing what? Of showing namaha. That namaha is, I prefer to think of it as a reverential attention, right? It's a respectful acknowledgement. It's an acknowledgement of respect, right? It's a heartfelt acknowledgement that there is something there. And you are deserving of my love and attention. And I'm acknowledging a fact. In the military, it's an acknowledgement of the authority hierarchy. When you touch your parents' feet, it's a sign of love and respect, saying, you know, thank you for bringing me into this life. But what does namaste mean? Right? So when I say, I give you, may my namaskara, may I bow to you. Namas also means bow. May I give you my reverential acknowledgement and attention. I see something which I'm acknowledging here, and that has to do with you. But who am I to be doing that to you? Who am I to be bowing to you? Who am I to be bowing to you? What is the nature of that bowing? And who are you to be bowed to? Who are you to receive that reverential gesture? That reverential respect, right? Because I'm sitting here, I'm this body. I'm this bag of bones. Is this bag of bones bowing to that bag of bones? Well, maybe. That's, you know, in an external manifestation of the internal bhavana, the internal attitude, the internal feeling, right? The internal vision, it can manifest as a physical act of bowing. It might not. It might manifest as this. But who am I? I'm this bag of bones. So when I greet you, who is it that I see? And who am I that is seeing that? And what invokes that attitude, that acknowledgement that there's something more here than just two people who take themselves to be these bag of bones walking around. So when I look at this bag of bones, this body, it's a very curious thing. Because I take myself to be this body, right? There's no difference between me and body. When I touch my little finger, when my little finger is touched, you're touching me, right? But the curious thing is that how do I know this body? Epistemologically, looking at how one knows something, right? I'm just very concrete. This isn't abstract at all. This is very down to earth. I know things in the world through the five senses. Through sight, through hearing, through touch, through smell, and through taste. Right? Those are the common ways that we know what's in this world. And how do I know this body? Let's not get mystical here. You know, this is not about mysticism. How do I know this body? And it's not about science. We'll see. How do I know this body? I see this body, right? I hear this body. I see this body, I hear this body, I feel this body throughout the entire body. There's a sense of touch. Sometimes, unfortunately, I can smell this body, and I'm so inclined I can taste this body. But that's how I know this body. So what differentiates this body from any other object in the world? How different is this body than any other object in the world? Well, one thing, as we've talked about, is that this body is permeated by the sense of touch. So I cognize this body directly. I have what in Sanskrit is pratyaksha. It's a direct perception of this body, right? But I can also feel that table. One nice thing about this body is that if I want to raise this cup, I have to pick it up and put it down. And I don't have to do this with this body. If I want to raise this left arm, I don't need to pick it up with my right hand and let it drop. I can just say, rise, left hand, and the left hand rises. And I can say, lower, and the left hand lowers. You know, I have this certain relationship with this body where I have a direct ability to manipulate. And in some models of the world, there's, just as there's five senses, there's five capacities. Five karmendriyani is called in Sanskrit. Five capacities, including the capacity to walk, the capacity to manipulate things with your hands, the capacity to speak, etc. So I have this relationship with this body, and this body, I am the perceiver of the perceived. I am the one who knows the state of this body. I know that this body is fat, this body is skinny, this body is tall, this body is short, dark, light, healthy, unhealthy, etc. And just like the table, I inherently am not what it is that I objectify. I am the perceiver to the perceived. Right? I am the perceiver to the perceived, and I see this body, and I know it through my five senses. And I know it through this intimate relationship that I can manipulate it. But does that really mean that it's me? In the vision of the sages of India, the rishis, I am not what is objectified. Anything that I objectified is other, right? I walk around this world and there's other, 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 other. And really, the best place to put this body is in the world, because it's another physical object. It's made of earth, right? It's made of water. And it comes from the food that your parents ate. And it comes from the food that you eat. The food that you eat becomes this body. And when the body dies, this food goes back to the earth and it becomes dirt again, right? It becomes food for other plants. It's a thing. It's a physical thing in this world, just like every other physical thing. And I see it. I know it. It's an object of my knowledge. See this. This is not mystical. This is something just to be seen, right? Like this water bottle. You see this water bottle. All right? You can see this just as clearly. This thing is an object which belongs in the world. And of course, that doesn't dismiss all of its wonder and glory. I mean, the world is amazing, right? I mean, we've just scraped off a tiny bit of ignorance regarding what exists in the world, right? You take a flower, and we know some things about flowers. We know how some things work, and we know a lot that we don't know. There's a lot that we don't know in this world. So I'm not this body. It must be my senses, right? Because the senses perceive the body. The senses perceive the world. I must be my senses. Right? They're my means of knowledge for the world. Well, how do I know if my senses are working? Let's say one day I wake up and I'm blind. Or I'm next to a loud noise and I go deaf. How do I know that yesterday I could see or hear and today I don't? I can't see, I cannot hear. How do I know? Because I know my senses. I am the perceiver of my senses. I know whether there's some neuropathy, let's say, in my arm goes numb, or like in diabetes, people's feet go numb. So how do I know that my sense of touch isn't working, or my sense of sight isn't working, or my sense of hearing isn't working, or that I can't smell anything or taste anything? I know because I objectify, and I don't mean the word objectify in any sort of derogatory sense. It's just that I am the subject to the object of my perception. I am aware of this, and this is not me, because I am the one who is aware of it. And one of the things that is this, in the phrase, I am aware of this, is the senses. The sense of, I know if I see clearly, I know if I need glasses, I know if I'm blind, I can be blind in one eye, I can see in the other eye. It's an object of my perception. It's very subtle. It's not like something out, it's not like a baseball bat or something. You with me? So, the senses themselves cannot be me, truly. I mean, if we take ourselves to be a conglomerate of things, you could say, oh, well, I'm the senses. That's just semantics. You're just playing with words. But no, what we're trying to do is disentangle myself from my not self, from the not self. It's called Atma Anatma Vichara. And this inquiry is to really find the nature of oneself, because when I do namaste, who is that that's doing namaste? It's me. What's the nature of me? We've seen that this body is not me, it's an object of my cognition. We see that these senses are not me too. Pranas. If you're familiar with yoga, there's five pranas. Prana, apana, vyana, udana, samana. They have to do with the energies in the body, the systems in the body, digestive system, circulatory system, respiratory system, etc. So there's these systems which keep this body alive, these energies. Am I those? Well, digestive system. One of the attributes of the digestive system is hunger. But I know hunger. Hunger is perceived by me. It's an object of my perception, right? So all these attributes of this body, of this prana, of these senses, I take to be me. When I say I am something, and that something is almost inevitably not quite true. When I say I am tall, I am short, I am fat, I am brown, I am white, I am green, those are attributes of the body. And I take the attributes of the body to be me. And I take myself to be the attributes of the body. Because I take myself to be the body, I take the attributes of the senses, whether they're working or not, whether they're clear or not, you know. I take myself to be the deaf. I take myself to be blind, which are the attributes of the sense object. I take myself to be hungry. Doesn't mean that you don't respond to hunger or you don't get glasses. You do what needs to be done. But am I really those attributes of the body? What's happening here is something's called anyonyadhyasa, a mutual superimposition. For example, take a red hot iron ball, an iron ball, which is heated up and it's red and hot. Okay? Now, if you touch that, you say, oh, let's say a cannonball. Oh, the cannonball burnt me, right? The cannonball burnt me. But look, really what's there, you have a piece of iron which is round and heavy. That's the nature of iron, to be round in the cannonballs, to be round and heavy. It's the nature of fire to be hot and red. Brilliant, right? Yellow, orange, red. If we don't differentiate between the two, we say that fire, we can easily think that fire has the attributes of being round and heavy. Is fire round and heavy? No, those are attributes of the cannonball. Is the cannonball red and hot? Is that the nature of iron in this round form? No. So if we drop the cannonball, we say, oh, the fire fell. Well, we don't say that. We would say that the cannonball burnt me if I touch it. So this superimposition, we take fire to be round and heavy. And we take the cannonball to be hot and red. That's called mutual superimposition. It's exactly what happens with us. I lend my awareful existence to this body and these senses and the mind. We'll get to that. And I take myself to be these senses and this mind and this body. And I take those to be me. But really what we're looking at is we want to see. It's not a mystical experience. You don't actually need to remove. You don't need to remove the heat from the cannonball to know that they're different. In your vision, you understand. It's knowledge. You know that they're actually two different things which appear to be focused on the same locus, that they appear to be one and the same, when we know that it's not. So when I look at my mind, right, I must be, okay, if I'm not my senses, I'm not my body, I'm not my prana, I must be my mind, right? I'm the core of my personality, which is my mind. Which is, you know, my emotions, my desires, my raga dvesha, my opposite of desires, the things I want to push away. There are these talents, there's the capacities of the mind, there's the knowledge, right? There's decisive thinking, there's indecisive thinking. There's pleasant emotions, there's unpleasant emotions, right? There's verbal thinking and there's visual thinking. Right, there's memories, chittam. There's a wide variety of internal phenomenon in our internal landscape. And this internal phenomenon, we take to be ourselves. I take it to be me. I'm my mind. I'm my thoughts. Right. I'm my feeling. I feel this way. I am so hurt. I am so happy. I'm not feeling much of anything. I'm fuzzy-minded. I feel really sharp. I'm agitated. I had too much coffee, right? You know, I'm unmotivated. I'm really motivated. How do we know that we are those things? How do we know that I'm agitated, I'm calm, I'm happy, I'm sad? How do we know? We see it. You know what's in your mind. You know what your thoughts are. Now, if you don't stop think about it, they may just be like the red hot iron ball, that they're one and the same thing. I'm my thoughts. How can I not be these thoughts? These thoughts are not different than you, but you are not really those thoughts. You are not constrained by those thoughts. Those thoughts depend on you. Those thoughts depend on the conscious being who is present in every moment and every thought. But those thoughts come and go. How could they be me? I don't come and go. I'm here. I perceive the thoughts when they come. And when I mean thoughts, I mean emotions and feelings, anything that enters our internal landscape. I perceive those things which come, and I perceive those things which go. Feelings, thoughts, memory, visualizations, words, right? So I can take a word and say, I can say, the food co-op, and I can, in those, just silently, in my words, in my mind, the food co-op, and I hear those in my mind, right? The food co-op. And those are perceived by me. Those words in my mind are objects. They're subtle versions of the words that are spoken aloud. So too with a picture. I can have a picture in my mind. Let's say I imagine a redwood tree, a giant redwood tree with these long branches and all these needles, and it shoots up 200 feet into the sky, and the sky is blue, and there's fluffy white clouds, and there's the smell of the needles warming in the morning sun, and the dew is kind of glistening on them, you know, and it's still, and off to the right you hear the sound of a mockingbird, right? And then you have some other finches or something over here. That whole scene is in your mind. And I know that scene. And actually, I can manipulate that scene. Let's say, all of a sudden, let's take this blue sky. We have this redwood tree. We have this blue sky. Let's make it green. We have a green sky and we have purple clouds. See it? Green sky, purple clouds. You can see that, right? That is an... You see that. You are aware of the thoughts in your mind. Now, so, right? Memories. I can remember my childhood. All right? I can remember playing when I was 3 years old. I can remember yesterday. I may not remember what I had for lunch, but I can remember the past, and I can project into the future. And I can have anxiety about the future, and I can have regrets about the past. And on all of these feelings and emotions, I know them. I know them. I know them. And to see this very clearly, that's one of the purposes of meditation. There's some types of meditation whose purpose is just to unlink myself from these thoughts, because so often these thoughts just take us away, right? These thoughts, it's like, well, I'm at the food co-op. I remember they have a really good vegan chocolate cupcake. Maybe I'll get a vegan chocolate cupcake. But, oh, you know, even though it's vegan, it's got all that sugar, and that's not good for me because, you know, my triglycerides and my other numbers are not that good. When I went to the doctor, you know, I don't really like that doctor. Maybe I should I really shouldn't even be going to an allopath. I really need a naturopath. I should actually fast. Okay, I think what I need to get is some cucumbers, some celery, some ginger, and some apples so I can make some juice, because... maybe I'll fast for the next 2 days. I know that I feel better, but oh, you know, I'm supposed to go on this bike ride. Oh, my bike is broken. I need to get a rear derailleur, and I'm not sure if I should get the low end or the medium end, or if I should try to fix this one. If I try to fix this, I don't really know what I'm doing. It just kind of snapped. And you go on and you go on and you go on and you go on. And so this tendency of the mind to take us away, that's one purpose of meditation. Dharana, dhyana. That's one purpose of meditation, is so that we have a little bit of We have a thumb space. We have a little bit of distance. We have a little bit of perspective between me and the mind. Especially when there's very strong emotions going. Or any emotions. I take myself to be happy. I take myself to be the condition of the mind. I take myself to be the attributes of whatever's going on inside. Right? I am happy. I am sad. But look, I can have a happy thought, and then a neutral thought, and then a sad thought, and then another happy thought, and then a concerned thought, an agitated thought. That thought comes into awareness. That thought exists in awareness. That thought goes from awareness. That thought comes into, that anxiety comes into awareness. That thought exists in awareness. That thought goes from awareness. That awareness is me. That's the stable thing in every cognition. That's the stable thing, this existent awareness. And it's not, this is not mystical. You can see this. So meditation can help, but but you can see this right now, like the thought of the redwood tree. Where's the thought of the redwood tree? Oh, maybe it came back. Okay, now think of a yellow elephant with bright purple spots. See it, right? There it is. Am I a bright yellow elephant with purple spots? No. That's an object of my cognition. Now a tree. Now think of the tree. The elephant thought went. It's gone. Where did I go with it? I'm here. And I'm aware. And what else is in the mind? Knowledge, right? And ignorance. Do you know Chinese? No, I don't know Chinese. Do you know English? Yeah, I know some English. Do you know the laws of thermodynamics? No, I don't. Do you know the color green? Yes, I know the color green. Do you know Gugabai? No, I don't know Gugabai. We know our knowledge and we know our ignorance. I am aware of what I know. I am aware of what I don't know. I can choose through action to transform what I don't know into what I know. I can go take Chinese lessons. Or I can choose not to. What is all this saying? This is saying that there's an understanding of what is incidental and what is fundamental. What is incidental and what is fundamental. And I am, as a conscious being, am fundamental. And this body, these senses, these emotions, this intellect, these memories, pranas are incidental. They come and go. I don't come and go. I don't come and go. And so am I limited? Am I defined? Am I constrained by, is this perceiver, the subject, am I constrained by the objects that I perceive? Do these objects limit me? Am I limited by my perception of that table? By the perceived table? Now we have limited capacities, right? This body cannot run 200 miles an hour. It can run a heck of a lot slower than 200 miles an hour. In fact, I just read an article where there's this little mite, which is the size of a sesame seed, which is the fastest creature in the world. And it doesn't mean it can outrun a panther. It just means that given its size, in 1 second, it can travel 200 times its size. Right? So if we could run in a second, so if I could run, let's say my size, I don't know, I don't know if I'd measure it vertically or horizontally. Let's say I'm 6 feet tall. 200 times that in 1 second. Let's say even this. Okay, let's say, 2 feet? 400 feet Can I run 400 feet in a second? I don't think so. So even a mite has more might than us. Even a mite has more might than us to run faster, to move faster. And this mind, this mind has certain, or we have some talents. Some people can sing, some people are good at math, some people, there's can cook, some people can think, can discover the theory of relativity. We all have different capacities in terms of the mind and the body. These are attributes and capacities of the mind and the body. And we've seen that I am the perceiver of the mind and body. So am I the perceiver, constrained, limited by the limited capacities of the mind and the body and the senses? It's a little like this. There's space in this room. We're meeting in this community room. There's space in this community room. And there's space in the kitchen. Now, let's look at space for a moment. I'm not talking about outer space. I'm not talking about getting all spacey. I'm talking about just space, right? Space is something which accommodates three-dimensionality, right? Without space, there would be no three-dimensionality. So does my hand displace space? This is all coming around to the meaning of namaste, trust me. We haven't wandered off into La La Land here. This is all pertinent. Does this hand displace space? Right? Does space move out of the way to make room for my hand? This hand displaces air because that's how I get a breeze. If I flap my hand, I feel a breeze here because the hand is displacing air and it's causing the air to move. In the same way, does my hand moving displace space? No, because there's space to the left of my hand, there's space to the right of my hand, and my hand occupies space. Space is unaffected by the move, by the presence or the absence of my hand, right? Space is not affected by the flowing of the blood in my fingers. Space does not become bloody because it accommodates the capillaries and the veins in my hand. Space does not become meaty because it accommodates the flesh of my hand. The attributes of this hand are not absorbed by space. Space doesn't need to shake off the attributes of my hand when I move it, right? There's no contrail. There's no residual of space. So there's space in this room here, and there's space in the kitchen. And from the perspective of the wall, space is limited. From the perspective of this body and mind, consciousness, existence is limited. But is space really divided by the wall that separates the kitchen from this room? Is the hand dividing space into this part and this part? From the perspective of the hand, yes, but space is at a different order of reality, right? Space accommodates this hand. So too, space accommodates the wall. Space is not separated by the wall. Space accommodates the wall. Space does not get dirty because the dirty water flowing from the sink, and space does not become clean because of the clean water flowing up through the pipes. Space does not become electrified because of the electricity flowing through the wires. Right? Space does not become dusty from the drywall. Space does not become wooden from the 2x4s that go into the creation of that wall. There is nothing which divides this space from that space. There is nothing that divides this space from that space. It's one, it's not even contiguous. Contiguous means two things put together. It's continuous. It is not affected by the wall. And in reality, there are no two rooms here. There aren't, from the perspective of the building and the walls, there are two rooms. From the perspective of space, this wall exists. We exist. This building exists. You know, Ocean Beach exists in space. The world exists in space. So too am I constrained by these things which I perceive. What is it that separates one I am from another I am? And whom do I meet? When I meet you, I can meet you as a body. The one body meeting another body. I can meet you through my desire system, right? That body is an attractive body. That body is an unattractive body. That body is an old body. That body is a young body, right? That body is tall. I'm short. That body is short. I'm tall. I can meet you as a personality. I can meet you in terms of what you do. We often think we are what we do, right? Oh, this person's an engineer. He must be. He is nerdy. He is. It's the same as I am. So whom do I meet? This I am. I am. Which then I falsely link on these attributes of other, of the world. Really, you know, the place to put the body, the mind, the senses is in this world, in this physical and subtle world. It all exists in phenomena. It's all created phenomena in this world. So when I say, oh, he is tall, when I say you are tall, I'm looking at you from the perspective of your body. I'm defining you in terms of your perspective, in terms of the perspective of the body. Now, it may not be false. But is it true? It may not be false, but it's not true that you are your body. I'm not my body. How can you be your body? I could define you in terms of what you do. I can define you in terms of your personality, right? You are happy. You are sad. I am happy, I am sad. When I say I am happy, I am sad, I am an awareful being which is cognizant of happiness and sadness in the mind, in my internal world, in my internal world, and I perceive my internal world. I am a awareful, simple awareful being, cognizant of internal phenomena as well as external phenomena. So it's really a misnomer. It's inaccurate to say you are happy. When I say you are happy. Or you are nice, you are mean. You know, it's complicated when we look at somebody else because we also see things through our desire systems, right? We have this filter, this desire system which colors our perception of what is in the world, especially other beings, other people. Because you know, we want to push things away, which we believe will make us unhappy. And we want to pull things towards us, which we believe will make us happy. And so mind is so good at putting you in these categories. You're something who can promote my happiness. You are something who will promote my sadness. You make me feel comfortable about myself. You make me feel uncomfortable about myself. You are good. You are bad. You are desirable. You are undesirable. You are smart. You are dumb. I am smart. I am dumb. What does that mean? Right? Those are, I am dumb. That's a value judgment placed on myself. And if my self-perception has certain triggers around intelligence, wherein I have a little voice inside myself saying, oh no, I'm dumb, and you have anxiety and fear about that, then your world is full of dumb and smart people. And you disdain the dumb people, and you are intimidated by the smart people. If you have a little voice inside yourself, if you have insecurity about who you really are, and you take yourself to be your body, and you look at your body, and it's you define it as ugly by some social cultural norms, or some projection, or some you know, fashion magazine cover, then your world is filled with ugly people and beautiful people. So when I see you, who is it that I meet? And what is it that separates us? Because when you say, I am, I say, I am. If you see who you are and I see who I am, there is no difference. There's nothing that separates consciousness. Because consciousness is not delimited, is not constrained, is not defined, and is not limited by the objects of consciousness, objects of awareness, which include this body and this mind. In Sanskrit, is called karya karana sanghata, this collection of the mind and body and everything that comes with it. So what is it, like space? What is it that separates this room from that room? Consciousness is that when I say consciousness, it's not an abstract principle. It's me. When I say the word I, the first person singular pronoun, when I say the word I'm referring to consciousness. I'm referring to me, the core of me. The core of me meaning that which perceives the phenomenon of daksha. And when you say I, what you can really mean, if you see it clearly, is the truth of who or who you are, right? I am, you are. So when I say you are something, if I'm not referring to that conscious being, then I'm really selling you short. I'm limiting you. And it's my insecurities and my lack of real self-knowledge that causes me to want to limit you to help me feel better about myself. So just like space, the wall does not divide space in the kitchen and the space in this room. But how can that be? How can that be? Because we have to look at existence. This, with the eye lands, when I say I am, when the eye lands on this conscious being, what does being mean? I am a being. I'm a human being. I exist. I exist is not a, do you know you exist? Yes, I know I exist. But existence doesn't seem to be a big deal, right? Because everything exists that we see, right? The table exists, the chair exists, the you know, microphone exists, the kitchen exists, the food exists, 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 exists. Exists means is, right? The verb to be, it is, has three forms. Am, is, are. It's the same verb, right? To be. I am, it is, you are. I am, it is, you are. It's all the same verb to be. And we see existence in every object, right? The table is, the table exists. The table is, there's an existent table. Let's look at the table. I don't see a table. But the table exists. Yes, the table exists. But I don't see a table. I'll bet you there's no table there. I'll bet you a chocolate cupcake, vegan chocolate cupcake, that there's no table there. Bet on. You're on. So out of my pocket, I take a chainsaw and I fire it up. And I cut the legs off that table. And I cut the tabletop in half. Where is your table now? All there is pieces of wood. And in fact, I don't need to take a chainsaw to the table, right? If you look, there's really just wood. When I say, you know, when something happens, you say, oh, knock on wood or touch wood. What you're doing in your vision is you're transforming a table into wood. It doesn't matter what form that wood is in. You're touching the substance wood and not the form and name, the nama rupa, not the name and form of table. So we usually, when we look at a table, we usually think of it, say, as a wooden table, right? Where the word wooden is the adjective. And the word table is the noun. We have a wooden table. But that's backwards. That's absolutely backwards, because really what we have is we have a tabley wood. We have tabley wood. We have wood in the form of a table. We have these straight, we have these things, these form of legs, we have the form of a tabletop, we have them connected. All we have is wood here in the form of a table. And a table is functional, right? I can't sit on wood. I can sit on a table. I can't eat at wood. I can eat at a table. Okay, well, then what really is there, what's fundamentally there, is wood. And table is just incidental. I see that. Okay, I'm going to take your wood and put it into a chipper. You know, don't think of the movie Fargo. We're just putting wood in. What do I have now? Where'd my table go? Well, my table's gone long ago. Where's my wood? These are just chips of wood. The form has changed. I'll take the chips and I will soak them, and they will, and then dry them, and it'll just turn into sawdust. It'll just turn into fibers, wooden fibers. Where did the chips go? Well, the chips were just a particular form and a name that I gave to this form. But really, they're just the fibers there. And then we'll take the fibers and look at it under a microscope. Oh, no, there's these cells there. The fibers are just made of the cells. The fibers are just a functional thing that holds stuff together. But really, there's wooden cells there. Oh, no. Get a powerful microscope. Oh, all we have is molecules. Molecules? All I see is atoms. No, there's no atoms really there. It's just strings, quarks. Now, when you look at this table, is it a table? At each level, what's there? We say, the table absolutely exists. But when the table in our vision or in physical reality stops existing because of the chainsaw or because of our analysis, our vichara, our inquiry, oh no, what exists is the wood. Oh no, what exists is the wooden fibers. Exists is the cells, exists is the molecules, exists, exists, exists. Does existence ever go? When I transform the table into just pieces of wood, does the existence that we attribute to the table, does that disappear? That existence is there in the wood. So really, it's a lot like it's like the tabley wood. It's the tabley wood. What's fundamental and what's incidental? And we can look at any object, and it's temporally decomposable. Every moment is temporally decomposable, And every spatial thing, every object is spatially decomposable, and decomposable in terms of its material. And anywhere we look, there's existence. It is. The table is. The wood is. The chip is. The fiber is. The molecule is. This body is. This mind is. This thought is. This is. I cannot look anywhere and not see existence. Existence is not some monstrous, abstract, philosophical concept. Existence is what we deal with every day. I mean, existence is an integral part of everyday experience. And it's just a matter of recognizing it, right? We don't even need to recognize that there's only wood here. We don't need to destroy the table, right? We just shift our vision. We just see things with more clarity, right? We don't stop using the table for what it's a functional creation. But there's no table there. In reality, there's only wood. And that wood exists, and that table exists. We can say the table exists. But it's called mithya. The table is neither existent nor non-existent. The table really doesn't exist. It's wood there. Same with a pot. I can take a clay pot, and before the pot existed, I have a lump of clay. And when the pot exists, I have a clay pot. And when the clay pot turns back into earth, all I have is clay again. What really is the existence? Adau ante chayannasti vartamani tattata. In the Gaudapada Karika of the Mandukya Upanishad, Gaudapada says, something which has a posterior and prior non-existence should be considered the same in the present. Something that didn't exist before and won't exist in the future really should not be considered too seriously as existing vartamane in the present moment. And yet it does, right? We interact with this stuff. But when you look at it from the perspective of what truly exists, what really exists? When I say the table exists, when I dismiss the table as only being wood, what happens to the table? It is. The table is. The wood is. Anywhere, whenever we shift vision, the only thing that's left is. We can go all the way down. And all that is. When I look at the wall, it is. When I look at the table, it is. When I look at your body, it is. When I look at my body, it is. When I look at my mind, it is. When I look at my senses, it is. They are. My senses are. Right? This body is. But the just like the table and the wood, isness is not inherent in the body. Meaning that you could say the body is an expression of existence, but it's not limited, because just like the space, existence doesn't end. Like, here's the air, and here's the body, right? Here's the air and here's the body. The air is, the body is. Is there anything that separates the existence that we attribute to the air from the existence we attribute to the body? There is nothing that can differentiate it, because it's at a different order of reality. Just like we cannot say there's anything that separates the kitchen space from this room space. What can we say that separates one space from the other? There is none, because it's a difference of reality. From the perspective of the air, from the perspective of the body, there's body existence and there's air existence. But you remove the air and you have a vacuum. Then you have a vacuum existence. And so there's nothing. You can point to nothing. There's no means of knowledge. And there's nothing in our experience, if we look at it deeply enough, that separates one existent thing from another, because the thingness, the vastutvam, the thing which makes the body and the air and the room, that's just incidental to the existence, which is undifferentiated, which is undivided, right? So when I look at myself, I am an existent being, to be, right? The verb to be, the abstract noun of that is being. That points to existence. I am an awareful being, which is not constrained by the things which I am aware of. And or you could say that I am an existent awareness, or I am awareful existence. They're not two separate things, because I resolve into existence. Am I? Yes. Was I in the past? Yes. Am I now? Yes. Will I be in the next hour? Yes. Body might die. That doesn't really speak to whether I exist in the future or not. So just like the space in the room, what is it that separates you from me? And who do I meet when I meet you? Right? I can meet your body, I can meet your mind, I can meet your personality. I can meet you as an incarnated being. This is a very beautiful vision, right? This particular set of circumstances in which I am born, and those particular set of circumstances in which you are born, we can see ourselves as incarnate souls, if you will, as individuals with a trajectory that goes beyond the walls of this birth and this death of this particular body. That's a very beautiful vision. But when you take it deeper, right? And so when you say namaste, when I say namaste, I can meet you as who you think you are, right? Joe Smith. I can be Daksha Chaitanya meeting you, Joe Smith. Who are you? I'm this person. I'm busy being Daksha Chaitanya teaching this thing, and you're busy being Joe Smith doing whatever it is you do and being whoever it is you do and fully identifying with these attributes of these of the body and mind. I can meet you as an incarnate soul, as a jiva, who's just passing through. And we can have this perception, this common vision, that we are not really constrained by the particular circumstances of this incarnation. But in truth, when I really meet you, if I really meet you, when I say namaste, I'm saying I recognize myself. It's not a place in myself. It is the truth of me. I recognize the truth in me, which is the truth of you. And there is no difference from the perspective of this body and mind and personality and experience, life experience. That's all just like the wall. From the perspective of the wall, there are two rooms. From the perspective of the details of what it is we carry around, thinking it is that we are, there's two people, there's two beings. But there really is only one space. There really is only one being here. One conscious being. And that's me, and that's you, and that's us, and that's Am. So really, when I look at you, it's artificial to say you are and I am. Really, it's really much more clear, as linguistically questionable, grammatically questionable it is, to say I am, you am. Because the amness that I refer to by the word I is not different than the amness that you refer to by the word I. And everything else is just incidental. It's not fundamental. And when I see that, I truly see you, because I see myself, and there is no difference. And we sport the differences. We sport the limitations. But it's not fundamental. Om namaste, namasarvebhyah. Om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachyate purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vasishyate. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om. Any questions?